There it is, jackpot. Awesome. Hey, friends. Welcome to Considering Foster Care and Adoption. We are here to answer all of your questions. But before we get started, I'm going to invite my wife and Katie and the Bagdanovs. Come on up, and I'll do this so I less. Feel free to grab a mic. Make sure that thing's turned on. You want me to keep doing this thing, don't you? This is our family, my wife Denise and I. Denise, do you want to do the 30-second, 60-second?
I'll just talk loud because you can hear me.
It's on. It's on. Is it powered? Is this on? Okay. Okay. Okay.
Don't worry, folks. There. We're professionals. We got this. Actually, we're not. But this is our family, and we started fostering when our oldest biological daughter. This is a weird angle to look at this. I got to come over here and do this. She's the one in the white sweater in the middle. When she was a baby, we started fostered her whole childhood, had a couple more biological kids. Kind of felt like adoption was not really in the cards for us. We're just going to love on kids until they go back home, and that happened for a little while until it didn't. And then we ended up adopting our oldest son, not pictured here, and then fostered again, adopted a sibling group of three from foster care that are right here in the yellow, yellow, and green, and then adopted another teenager from foster care, which is our daughter, Gannett, and then had one more little bio baby on the end over there in the hat. So we've got 9 kids total. Today, they're ages 9 to 31, and this has been this constant turnover of our family until recent years, and it's been so quiet and wonderful.
Yeah. So the joke is we win. We win the prize of the most kids, and it is a competition.
And youngest grandparents.
And youngest grandparents. Yeah, we didn't get into that, but lots. They don't put that on the brochures, like, hey, you're going to be grandparents in your 30s if you foster or adopt older kids, but nonetheless. So now I'm just stealing Katie's thunder because your story is amazing, and I jumped ahead. Okay, Bagdanovs, here we go.
And I did turn it on. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We're the Bagdanovs, and that is, Leonard and Mandy. And then Hope, our daughter, is biological. And then we adopted Andrew in 2014 from Ukraine. He came over when he was 5.
Nailed it. We'll get more here in just a minute. And then there's the Sherrods.
All of them.
All of them.
Hey, so my name is Katie, and my husband is Chris. And then our story, I guess, where my family first had my first 5 bio kids, and then started doing infant foster care, and God began, things happened, and they were going to go back home, but she did. She's our baby girl, and she's 19. And then we did foster for a lot of years and a lot of different children, and then did some aging out and a mother-baby combo waiting to get into rehab, and just some different things, different needs available, emergency situations. And then in the midst of the foster years, God brought home 2 more. They're Isaiah and Christopher. And so we're empty nesters with birds in our nest. And they're both in 4th grade, which makes life a lot easier. I'm very grateful that they're both in the 4th grade. And then I have 5 grandchildren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nailed it. Yeah, you're winning there for sure. Awesome. Well, we want to answer your questions, and we assume you have some. So this is a text-in number. Although if that just completely fails us, then we're happy to just talk to you. But what I wanted to make sure was, in the event we didn't get to all of them, that I've got them captured and we can respond through the text chat that I've got set up. So go ahead and punch that into your phone. And just as things come to mind, I've got some like prefab questions for them to engage with, just so that they can give you some sense of a framework of like what their motivations were, what some of their expectations or unmet expectations look like, and we can move forward from there. But want to make sure that we can answer your questions. And then in regards to like getting us moving in the right direction, I want to spend just a minute making sure that we're all aligned, because I think what so often happens is we kind of just walk in with whatever moved us to even consider foster care or adoption, and we haven't necessarily had somebody go, hey, here's what a biblical approach to this is, for the fact that we are a biblical people, that we are designed by a God that has given us his word and that has given us biology and even revelation through that to understand those things. And then additionally, that our motives should be biblical, that they should be squared around what the Bible has to say. And so I'll just start by saying that a biblical people are stewardship focused. Recognizing, similar to what Chris said last night, like, we are stewards of our children. We are stewards of any other children that might come into our home, even for as long as they are in our home, and not just for them, but for their families as well. And sort of the extended definition of family that comes along when we start to open our homes and give of ourselves to others. And so there is a deep-seated reality to this idea of mindness, especially if you've experienced or experiencing infertility, of just like, I want a child that's going to feel like they belong to me, that's going to be loyal to me. And yet, what so often happens is you've got a child who absolutely is capable of loving you and belonging with you, and yet knows that they have a genetic history or a biological history or even a trauma history that is unconnected to you and yet still overlaps. And so just in the same way that your child can, or you can have multiple children that you love equally or even differently in some sense, but still love equally, that a foster or adopted child can come, can embrace, can know and feel like they belong in your family, and yet also know that they have other connections. And that doesn't have to be a war, right? That can be something that you acknowledge and something that you embrace and even something that you help them process, because so many times our kids then turn 18 having never been told it's okay for us to put up pictures of biological mom and dad, even if they had some connection to their abuse or their neglect that brought them to your home, or abandonment feelings, that they would still have some knowledge of who that person is. And that way, when they turn 18, they don't just run off and try and go figure it all out on their own, which has rarely turned out well for kids. And so additionally, a biblical design is restoration-minded, okay? This is one that tends to throw foster and adoptive parents for a loop, and so I don't want to overstate the case, but I think it's important that we recognize that God's biblical precedent for caring for vulnerable children is restoring them to their biological family. That doesn't always turn out, right? Like, it's why we have over somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 6,000 children waiting to be adopted today in Texas alone. It's why you have children with unexpected or in unexpected pregnancies where a mom's trying to make an adoption plan. It's why you have what are known as orphans or double orphans, where both parents have passed away internationally, that are in need of a family. And yet our desire, because of God's design, is that they would be restored to their biological parents if that's possible. And if not, right, then God's design additionally can be found in Leviticus 25, in the kinsman redeemer, and where whether it's extended family or somebody else in the community, namely us, where we raise our hand, we go, we've got a place where a child can be safe, where a child can heal, where a child can belong, where an extended family can be made family, or an unknown family can be made extended family, where even biological mom maybe now has more of a relationship with their biological child, but is more of an aunt than she is mom anymore. And so I think that's a really sweet story when it works out really well. Sadly, it doesn't always work out really well because of generational cycles of addiction, poverty, violence, sin. And yet, as a biblical people, we get to prioritize that biblical design and stand in the gap and recognize through grace and mercy that we're redeemed. And so we get to be conveyors and ambassadors of God's redemption, reconciliation in these situations. And then lastly, that our biblical motives would be gospel-oriented. What's really important here is that sometimes we have a rescue mentality, because we realize the vulnerability of children, and we start to equate their familial adoption with God's salvific adoption, I feel like I just turned that into like theological terms that wasn't necessary or helpful. But what I'm trying to communicate is sometimes we go, I'm adopting a child into my family the same way that God adopted me. And that's not the case. When we adopt a child into our family or we open our home for foster care, we're not saving them for eternity. We may be rescuing them in some sense from some very difficult circumstances. And yet, God's still one, the one who does the salvific work. So there can be some real confusing aspects that come in whenever we try to make that parallel. And so again, back to being stewardship focused, it's really important that we do that. And yet we do recognize that our aim is to model Christ-likeness for that child and not necessarily to open our home so that we might get something out of it, although there's certainly that benefit. I would say that we've been blessed. I'm sure every single one of us would go, man, God has absolutely blessed me in ways that I had no plans for, no anticipation of when I opened my home and gave of myself. Even if I did that out of impure or not fully refined or understood motives, that God has done something in me that has drawn me closer to the good news of Christ and his salvation that I'm able to convey to this child now and to their family now because I'm gospel-oriented. So with that being said, happy to answer more questions, but I've got a few kind of already loaded, and I'm going to mostly get out of the way and just facilitate a conversation, and then as you send questions in, I'm going to cut them off, and we're going to answer your questions first, okay? So this is what I got loaded just in case you're a little short on the draw, a little slow. Okay, that's fine. It's fine if you're slow on the draw. It's okay. You don't have to be timid. But what were your deciding factors to foster adopt? Like, what got you started in the, not just the we're dabbling in it, but like we've crossed over, this is happening. Anybody can get us started.
We can start.
Great.
So for us, for Leonard and I, we got married later in life. So I was 41 and Leonard was 43. So we had no idea. Our hands were open to the Lord. As far as his plan for having children, we both wanted children. We both come from large families. Leonard's one of nine. I'm one of four. And so we love kids, and we would have loved to have been blessed with kids. And so we just, our hands were open and we prayed. And so we were blessed with Hope, who's our bio sweet daughter, who's almost 16 now. But then we struggled with a miscarriage, and we actually went to an infertility doctor, and he said, if I help you, you would be the oldest person I helped. And I was like, got it. And so we started with the foster to adopt path. We thought that would be real natural in local, in Dallas. We knew the need, et cetera. And then after kind of processing through it, praying through it, going to a couple of classes to prep for it, Leonard and I both felt like that, you know what, this is might be too difficult for us, as well as our sweet daughter at the time, to bring kids in and out of our home, because we, with Bruce, believe that fostering the hope of reconciliation is really the number one driving factor there. And so we changed to adoption internationally, and domestically, we were a little older, and so it would have been natural to go to infant, and then we were getting older in age. We're like, maybe we would love to adopt a little bit older than that. And so we naturally went to Russia, because that's where Leonard is, his family is from. He's full Russian. And then sweet Putin closed Russia to American adoption. He's not sweet, you're right. That was tongue-in-cheek. And so then we ended up in the Ukraine, and that's where Andrew was. And we brought Andrew home in 2014 at 5. And so that's our story.
Awesome. So you're not even going to get to answer, because now we've got questions. This is great. So we're just going to jump right in. Everybody good with that? We're just good with the yank? Okay, awesome. Here we go. What are the big things you've learned the hard way that you wish you would have known going into it? That's actually one of the questions later, so I'm glad somebody asked that. But what are the big things you've learned the hard way that you wish you would have known going into it? Not all at once.
Yeah. If this is a session on talking you out of it, talk to me. I'm kidding. But I think that's part of the learning process, too. For me, You would hear, like in all the training, online training classes, that there's going to be issues, that there's just a myriad of like abandonment issues or a disconnect. I mean, we just live in a broken world, and so that separation from parent to child is a broken process, and so that's what you're inheriting. And so those are the types of things that you, in your training, you'll hear a lot of that trauma and learning differences potentially, FAS, all of those things. And so you kind of like, oh, yeah.
FAS.
Fetal alcohol.
There you go.
And so potentially there's all these issues and even separation. So two things I'll say. Having heard all that, and like in my head, having the knowledge, but then bringing Andrew home and experiencing that were two different things. And I was like, oh, this is what they meant. And I didn't learn some of those things until 2 years, 3 years, 4 years in. And so, and then I think the other piece to that too was the understanding that even when you get them as infants, there's still a separation from the natural order, and there's still issues that come with that. And like, and I don't think people really realize that, because they're just a baby. How would they know? But it's a thing, and it's just the way God designed it, the wiring of you know, natural birth. And so just understanding those aspects, like I heard all of that in those trainings, but it didn't connect with me until later.
Yeah. So maybe another way to help frame it is, it's not that you don't know this stuff or you aren't told this stuff. It's the reality of when it shows up in your house that you're like, oh, they said this was going to happen, and now I just have to respond to it for the first time. Or they said to be prepared for that, but I wasn't as proactive, and now that it's happened, I feel caught off guard, and now I wish I would have. So it's no, there's not a ton of, I would say there might be some, but there's not a ton of like, we don't want to tell you. It's more so like we've experienced, I think more so of like the, no, we're going to tell you more than is probably even going to happen, just to make sure that you can never say we weren't told. And almost in a sense of like, we'd rather scare you out of it on the front end so that we don't end up in some really bad places further down the line. And so anything else y'all would add?
One of the, I think I would go back to the first thing when we started for foster, was that it was just to fully love this baby and bring them into our house. And I remember taking first bath, first pictures, because I wanted to hand all that first, because while they're with us, I am their mom. I am their mom. They're one of my children for the time that God gives me with them, and I'm 100% in. And we had, when that first one went to the adoptive family that was lined up for him, we were crushed. And we were like, oh my goodness, we're like basket cases. And as we were so sad, we realized this is wonderful. This is exactly how we should feel, because we have given this child our heart, our love, and God restores that and replenishes that, and we're supposed to be vessels of his love and streams of living water that never cease. And it's not about what you get, it's about what you give. And we loved this little boy, and it was our honor and privilege to place him into the hands of his parents that God had really ordained.
Good. Yeah.
And we just realized if we didn't feel this way, we wouldn't have done our job. And so God's got me. I mean, so any, you know, he's going to restore me, and he's got my heart. I'm a follower of Christ, and I have everything I need for that. And so if I can be just the hands and feet of Jesus at that moment for that child, then that's the blessing. But yeah, it's hard.
Denise, anything you want?
I would just say for me, I think I went into this thinking this was going to be about me doing good for kids and helping them. And if I could boil it all down, I would say I'm a little bit of a control freak. I'm an Enneagram 3, which means we look good on the outside and things are falling apart behind the scenes. And just that when I had biological kids, I could at least keep up the guise of being in control because they were well attached to me and because I had made them and they'd been with me since day one. It was kind of true that one of our goals as a family was my sister's kids would like climb all over the chairs when we'd go out to eat. And I was like, well, we're not going to do that. They're going to sit down. We're going to eat dinner as a family and blah, blah, blah. This is the hill we're going to die on. And with my bio kids, I could train them up that way. And it worked out like that. So I had this false sense of control. And let me just tell you, fostering and adopting will just strip that right away. And that has helped me to be a better person and a better parent to all of my kids, because even just the thought that I could control is gone. And what freedom comes with that for them to be who God has created them to be. And for me also not to walk around with giant baggage about how my kids have turned out. I'm off the hook. Lord, I'm following you. I'm doing what you asked. This is on you, how they turn out.
Yeah. So,
you have a question?
There was, go ahead.
Yeah, and there's, in utero trauma and relinquishment trauma is true. And,
yeah.
Cocaine was present, congenital syphilis, different things could happen.
Yeah, I would say for children from foster care, about 85% of children are removed for the legal reason given as neglectful supervision. It's usually associated with mom being or using drugs. And so we've had a number of premature infants that have come into our home or infants that have come into our home that were experiencing withdrawals. And so it wasn't that they couldn't necessarily overcome some of that or that it didn't also then create some impulsivity. Alcohol was the big one that does some pretty permanent brain damage in your child's, like, not lifelong necessarily development, but definitely decades long development and growth and health. And so that's not to say, like, oh man, that child's got fetal alcohol syndrome or fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, but it is to say, like, just something to be mindful of. And so that's one. Another one that might come along is you might be prone to think that because a child's been in your home for a time, that, like, okay, they're acclimated and they're good and we kind of know them and they know us, and you let your guard down when they may have been exposed to some sexual activity. I think that's, like, the big one. Somebody asked a next question of, we currently have biological girls and are processing eventual adoption of a boy. What wisdom would you give us on this? So that's typically, like, the heavy is the, like, oh gosh, you bring a boy into the home and what if they have some... like, because we're a hypersexualized culture, we both have a hypersensitivity to that, and then we also tend to interpret anything and everything sexual, like even a little boy running around naked at the age of 4, as like, oh my gosh, he's, you know, into voyeurism or something, you know, some weird fetish, and it's like, no, he's 4. This is pretty normal sexual development of, like, look, I've got a penis, and it's stiff, and, like, what is that, right? Like, that's awkward to say at a conference, but... in the privacy of your own home, like, there's not some book a 4-year-old's reading about their sexual development, right? They're learning from you. And so you get to help contextualize what is and isn't appropriate that they likely have just never had before. And when they go, oh, this feels good to touch this, like, rather than flipping out and being like, oh, they're going to commit some, you know, heinous thing in our home, you might just go, yeah, it does feel good, doesn't it? Like, let's talk about God's design, and then let's also recognize, like, that's okay for the bathroom and your bedroom and mom and dad or a doctor and the appropriate places that we do that. But, like, we've been guilty of, like, letting our guard down on some of those things. Anything else y'all would add to some of the, like, things we're hypersensitive to that it can be awkward?
Well, back to the sexual thing and having a combined family of, you know, you have these little strangers that are coming in, and they could be 16 or they could be 2, and their age is no hint at what they've experienced or or what they might be wrestling with or feeling or doing. And I would just say there's safeguards that I think foster and adoptive families tend to put in place that they're not just good for our kids or our situations, they're good for all kids. And I think everybody's real loosey-goosey. Let me tell you, we are not sleepover people. We are not, I mean, like, we have things in place. When we met as a community group and all of our kids were little, every other community group on the block would send the kids up to somebody's playroom to watch TV or to hang out. Don't do it. Pay somebody to be there, even if it's tough. Figure out something else, because kids are kids, and safeguards can keep everybody safe. So if it's good for kids who have been sexually abused or who have viewed pornography or who have tendencies there, it's good and safe for all kids. So I would just urge you to know that it may feel extreme, and you may be the weirdos who are like, no, we don't do sleepovers. But once you just say it, it's just over, and it's not a topic of conversation anymore.
Yeah.
Except for occasional whining and asking, and we still nip it.
Good, Mandy.
I think that's so good, Denise. The other thing, since Andrew grew up in poverty, so food was scarce, and so we wanted to be sensitive, but we also knew that nutrition was super important to the continued development of his eyes and just different things in his body. And so we have to be careful now that he's been with us 9 years, but the brother loves food. And so we just have to be careful with the hoarding of that or the just other things that could happen with that. But I would say, because of poverty, you have to remember some of the things that they didn't have and that they really want when they come to us.
And just along that, I mean, I think a lot of my children that came to my home had issues with food. That, and just even Isaiah, who came home at 7 months with neglect, he wasn't fed well. And I don't know what exactly he was fed, but just even as an infant experiencing starvation and feeling, and that's where a lot of your buttons are set for your life. And when those get off and in utero, in infancy, I don't care how many scheduled meals you have, and we eat every day, we always have food.
Right.
I say his full button is broken.
Yeah.
And so I have to say, hey, when he's somewhere, he might eat the whole pizza, so please just make sure he only eats two, okay? So just little things like that. And he's still working on it. I mean, I think there's been 3 times he said, I'm full. I'm like, oh, great, good job, yay.
Yeah, because they don't have the developmental maturity to know when they're satiated, when they're full. And so they'll eat until they throw up and then keep eating and so on and so forth. Leonard?
Right, and I think... then there's the part of you like, well, he didn't have it, so I want to give. And so there is this responsibility as parents to kind of help with, with monitoring that. And so and sometimes that can be really hard, because it's like, no, I don't want to feel like I'm taking something away from him. And so, and I think the other thing, too, is I think the whole idea, I think this is what I struggled with when we brought him home, was like, hey, he's coming. We've basically swooped him up out of, a bad situation. And so he's going to be in a two-parent home, in a Christian home, in America, and things. And even talking about his eyes, the eye doctor said, wow, just in the time that I saw him from the first time to the second time, with good nutrition, his eye, it's amazing how his vision has progressed. So in my mind, I'm thinking, we're up and to the right. And so, and I think everything's going to just keep doing what we're doing. And yet, you have to kind of keep in mind, to Katie's point about, like, there are some triggers in there that are just broken. And so then I'm thinking, like, well, shoot, we provided this, like, loving home for him, and we're still dealing with this. And, we're still dealing with this. And so I think the idea of like, it's all going to go away, it was just, in my head.
It'll grow out of it.
And so then now it's a sanctification process for me. And so how do we continue loving, staying the course, and not being, thrown off by expectations that we have.
Yep. Next question is there a resource that shows all options for adoption? I would say email me, familyrestoration@watermark.org, and we'll give you our info packet. And it's got both all the processes as well as the process within each option. So you've got international adoption, private infant adoption, adoption, matched adoption for children's rights who are already terminated, like they're legally available for adoption now. You have foster care that then might lead to adoption. And then you have embryo adoption as well. I think I've covered them all. So happy to share that with you, as well as we have a resource for your community group to make sure they're informed and educated and can help you make wise decisions. Anything, this isn't the question, but anything on why y'all kind of shared a little bit of why, like if somebody says, we're in, we just, now we have too many options to choose from, how do you prioritize which one? Do you have some wisdom in regards to that level of discernment to go, would you just say, just pick one and go? Just flip a coin. Or, like, what's your, how would you, yeah, don't just flip a coin, but how would you help somebody discern that?
I think you know best the desire of your heart. And if you are longing to hold an infant in your arms, then private matched adoption, domestic adoption, there's a need for all of these. We want a mom or a couple with an unplanned pregnancy, we want someone waiting with open arms for them. So might it take longer? Might you wait longer? Maybe. But there's still, we want those families available. We want her to be able to make a choice of where she places her kids. So there's a need in all of these areas. So I can't say that one's greater than the other. But I think, too, you should listen to your heart. And if that's where you are, there's nothing wrong with adopting an infant. I could beat you all day, yay, fostering, and welcome 15 kids into your home before you get to keep two of them and all that. That sounds very alluring, I know. Ultimately for us, because we had biological children and had been through that, it wasn't, I didn't have that just like, ooh, like, oh, my ovaries were screaming for a newborn. And so we ended up adopting, it's a feeling, it's real, a teenager. And I will tell you, I have looked at the face of a child that I have just given birth to and went, oh, it's getting me all emotional, when a lanky 15-year-old walked out of a children's home wearing double XL clothes hanging off of his frame and about 7 little mustache hairs down here, and I looked at him for the first time in person, I felt the same thing. Now, I've adopted kids I did not feel that way about at the first moment, but I can tell you, you can and will love them like somebody you made yourself, like your homegrown.
Yeah.
No matter how they come to you, whether that's placed by adoption or foster care.
Totally. Because I wondered if I was going to love them the same. And if they're, God creates families however he desires, and he brings, he has the story planned, and there's not a plan B. And so just believing in that he is the one he brought my kids home different ways. For us, it was more the kids in my own backyard is how I kind of say it. And then just for being available. And God kind of changed our stories as we went, because I always want to just tell God, this is what I'm going to do. Like, for some reason, I keep telling him what I'm going to do, and it keeps, you know, he's like, keeps reminding me he's God. That was a joke. I mean, I have to keep learning. You know, Katie, you are not in control of this story. God is. And so, really, I think as we journeyed through, it became just more, Lord, we just want to be available for the children, whatever that means. And then God led me. He just kept changing the desire of my heart as I moved forward. And I always tell people, just start moving forward. And then God continues to mold and take your story wherever it's supposed to go. But eventually we became to where it was where we said, Lord, I want to stand in line for the kids who nobody's standing in line for.
Yeah.
Was ours.
Yeah, and I love that. I think everybody has a version of just taking the next step, and our mantra was just put one foot in front of the other and keep going, and see what the Lord will do.
As a way to maybe help you refine this, what's been shared is, you might be fishing for a feeling, and that's not going to serve you well. It's not that you should disconnect your desires from your feelings. But if you put your feelings on attachment and connectedness at the highest priority, I think you're going to end up missing some things that God desires for you or your family. And so just find yourself pursuing faithfulness and trust that God's going to help you align your feelings with the faithfulness that he's drawing out in you.
But I would say too, like to Denise's point, like there, if the desires of your heart, continue to pray and process through that. And so in our process, we never wanted to adopt anyone older than Hope, because we didn't want to usurp that, you know, or birth order. And we just kind of went to the Lord with that. Like, we were aging out of infant. And so, okay, what's the range? And Lord, would it be too much for you to bring us a maybe 3 or 4 year old? And sure enough, he brought Andrew. When we started the process, he was 4. And then when we brought him home, he was 5.
Yep. Yeah. So that's a common question that we could tackle real quick. Birth order. Anything y'all weigh in on that of just why or why not? Like, we're an example of like, nope, just completely threw it out the window. Not, it wasn't that, you know, that loose, but at the same time, it was pretty like, we've got space, so we'll provide a home. Anything on how y'all process
that? For us, we did birth order. So I think I had 5 kids ages 2 to 10, and then Callie came home at 2. I mean, when Kobe was 2, like 2 years, so it kind of like just fell into place. And just even looking at the personalities, she came home ready to rule over the whole household, so I'm really glad, like, she was down there. But just also just personalities, which is hard when you're doing foster. I try to get as much, information as I could, because almost with her being 2 years younger, she almost overruled my timid, kind-hearted 2-year-old. But just, I think it for us, it did. And then when the kids were older, we took in teenagers in different ages. But it really was wisdom and prayer and trying to, yeah, like that. But the ones were birth order for us. But
yeah.
Yeah, we went all crazy, all out of birth order. But 2, our kids came to us, they were not their parents' first children, and some of them had siblings, and so where they were in their family of origin birth order was not necessarily where they would land in ours either. And I know there's like all these funny reels about like middle child, first child, you know, whatever, and sometimes that totally hits it on the, Bruce sends them to me all the time because we're both babies, and we're totally babies, like it's the worst. We were spoiled, and as are our babies.
Because we're the best.
But you know, sometimes that like hits the nail on the head, sometimes it goes out the window because you have your second one, and they're strong-headed, and they end up kind of functioning as the oldest child. And so I would just say, just like anything else, like, you can have your idea of how things, like, you can try to get an algorithm together of, well, you know, like, we've got all girls, and if we brought in a boy, that might tip the balance of power, and blah, 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 blah. You can try and, like, set up the dominoes. Just, it doesn't play out like that in real life. The numbers don't add up. And so put some thought and prayer into it, but just know ultimately, again, you don't know how things are going to play out. And we saw our daughter, Gannett, who's the youngest in her biological family, become an incredible big sister. And we saw when Kate was our baby girl, we saw her become a big sister. And just, you get to see them.
Yep.
It switches things up and it messes things up, but it can be beautiful too.
All right, we've got 20 minutes, and I'm going to try and rapid fire through some of these. We'll start with this one. If the goal is to permanently grow your family, should adoption be the only option, or is it okay to foster with the hope of adoption?
Yeah, it's okay. You just have to hold both these two opposite things in your hand at the same time. And one is being fully on board with reunification, 100%, and being fully on board with having your heart open to keeping this baby forever if they need you. I'm going to love you as much as you need me, as long as you need me, and that's what I can commit to today. So I think it's totally okay to foster. And the odds say, only of kids who come into foster care, only 1 out of 3 are reunited with their parents, and of those kids, 70% of them come back into foster care. So it's not a matter of if you will be able to adopt from foster care, it is when. If you do it long enough, statistically, you will have the opportunity to adopt a child that you've cared for. But I just think you have to be able to do both of those things, and if you feel being pulled one way or the other, then maybe tap the brakes or just pray, work through those things.
And you also... You have to really trust God, your faith and hope and your joy.
You actually have to trust him.
You feel it deeply this, because you guys, your heart is, these aren't animals or pets. These are children.
Yeah. That's really good.
Humans who have life, and then you need to, you have to ask God to give you love for their bio families, because you might find out some things that were not very nice. And so The Lord, but God has yanked my heart and transformed my life and shown me more of his love and his parenting towards me and his kindness and his forgiveness. And then, too, my judgmental, pharisaical ways, thinking, oh, I'm the good parent. This is the good family. I am a sinner, and this is the sinful family. This sinful child can enter in. And the Lord also just showed me to stop judging the birth mother, because Katie shared, you are that same person, but by the grace of God, who am I? And too many times I would have judgment, and the Lord broke me to love them, to say I would be that same person on the streets doing whatever, but by the grace of God. So it really, it just teaches you so much, because it just messes with your heart big time.
and I think for us, as we talk to Andrew about his story, it's so encouraging to be able to talk about his mom, because his bio mom is still in the Ukraine, and she gave up rights voluntarily. That's how they do the foster system over in the Ukraine. That talk about her as a hero, because she saved his life by not using abortion, like happens so often in our world today. And we talk about the culture, and it's easy to talk about the culture because Ukrainian culture is so close to Russian culture. And so we have a Ukrainian flag. We talk about the war, and we, even though, you know, he's not originally from America, but he's American now, we really, really highlight for him who he is and where he was born and what that looks like for him. And it's really, it's a treat for me, because I am in the minority in our family. I'm the American. I have a Russian husband, a Ukrainian son, and a half Russian daughter. And so we talk a lot about culture. And I love, and I know these families well enough to know how they love their families in that way too. So it's really a treat for us to have welcomed Andrew into our home, and that's really enlarged our home culturally.
Yeah. So to tack on to this question, what are selfish reasons to adopt? Is it wrong for the motive to be to grow your family versus doing it for the child? I think maybe to help synopsize some of what's been shared, wrong in the sense of like sinful, no, in the sense of like, especially foster care being a tryout for adoption, yes. Like, and that's unfortunately, I think what we tend to see is, gosh, this, the words that families will often use is, this child's not a good fit for our home. And what they mean to say is, this child's behaviors are difficult, and we don't really like difficult, and it's hard, and it requires us to change our routines and what's convenient for us and what we're used to, and we're not willing to do the hard work or be patient to help this child assimilate into some of the healthy routines that we've developed, or we're not willing to let go of some of the things that maybe aren't so central to our family identity in order to make room for this child. And that's not to say that 100% of the time, you know, you have to adopt the child placed in your home when they become adoptable. However, I would say that, like, let your yes be yes. And so the reasons why people tend to foster with the hope of adoption is because it's affordable. And so they look at private infant adoption, they look at international adoption, they go, gosh, we could just never raise that much money, or we don't have that. I would say, your father owns a cattle on 1,000 hills, and you need to let the church be the church and help support you in that. But then B, not go, well, this is the most affordable way for us to do it, and we're just going to keep fostering kids till we find one that feels like a good fit. That's where I would draw a line and go, hey, let's work on that. How did you bridge the gap between your kids and the foster adopted kids in regards to, like, maybe sibling relationships and things like that? Or how did you help maintain the same relationships between all of them? All of them. Yeah. How did you help maintain relationships? I'm not reading that right, but nonetheless, how did you bridge the gap between your kids and foster adopted kids? Was it like the Jets and the Sharks, if that's too weird of a reference because the room's younger than that? But nonetheless, was it like
the classic,
thank you. Was it like a gang? Like, did Hope and Andrew sort of like, hold on now, you're not the same.
to kind of catch it early. And so we took Hope with us on our initial trip to Ukraine. And so with the idea of that, yeah, hey, you're the older sister, and we're going to bring, you know, your younger brother home. And then, so I think we started off that way. And then I think when we brought him home, it was always kind of encouraging the family unit. And so, and there's just that natural sibling rivalry, you know, that happens. And so just navigating through that, trying to keep just kind of normalizing it, I think was probably what we tried to do. Like, it wasn't, you know, anything special.
I think for us too, also, when we started, we gathered our kids, and they were all different ages, but just we first started just going through the scriptures of what God says about putting the lonely in families. And we didn't want our children to be bitter that this is something my mom and dad did, but this is something we do as the shared family that we want to make available for whoever God would like to bring towards our home. And so we tried to show them what God's word says about that before they came home. And even when we got a phone call, I remember sitting them down. We had a phone call for a sibling group of 3, 2, and 1, and it had to decide by that night, and it was a rainy November day, but it just went by through them one by one. All I knew was they were African American, had been hungry and homeless, and needed a place to go. And we sat down, had a family meeting, and I was like, what do you think? And like, Mom, let's do it. Because I said, they might break your toys. I don't know what mm-hmm. they say. They're going to, you know, they're going to wreck our life a little. And we're going to have to stay home with them more. We're going to tell them, trying to make sure. You're going to have to move bedrooms, and we're going to have to make room. What do you think? Let's do it, Mom. Yeah, let's do it. And just broke my, warmed my heart. And my kids had a welcoming, warm inviting spirit.
Helping your biological kids get it, right? That it's not just showing up to church on Sundays and talking about these things, right. That they get to live it out too.
And in saying that too, all my kids are mine. That I'm a real sensitive, I don't know about y'all, but it's like,
sure.
How many are your own? They're all my own. Do you mean, how did they come home?
She just pulled the finger out.
Hold on. Hold on a minute. You mean, how did they come home? They all came home different ways, but they're all my own children because God gave them to me and entrusted them to our care, and this is our family. So don't you dare say that in front of one of my, they're all my own. You know, how would that make you feel if, you know, you weren't my bio and, you know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Me and my husband are not blood related, and we are covenantly bound. So anyway, sorry. Yes, it matters.
You keep telling them that sometimes, don't you? You're like, we're covenant bound, me and you.
So our first biological child was a little girl, and she was exactly like, I had dreams about what her face would be like and who she would be, and she was that person to a T. And then, and I really wanted a whole house full of boys, but we knew she was going to be a girl. And then our next baby was also a girl, and she was the polar opposite of that. And literally when she was born, I was like, You look like a little stranger to me. Looked a lot like Bruce, like a little tiny baby Bruce as a girl, which is scary, but she's cute now. So anyways, having two girls that were 19 months apart, I had all these dreams of, I'm very far away. I'm 6 and 8 years away from my own siblings. And so again, back to the rotten baby, I had kind of my own little world. I just thought, oh gosh, these little girls are going to be thick as thieves. Guys, wow, oil and water, their whole lives. They're totally different people. They've never gotten along. Now they're young adults. They're still at each other's throats. Like, y'all have not seen each other in 4 months, and now you're in the same room, and it's a freaking holiday. Calm down and hug one another. There's just no guarantees. And so if you're worried about people coming in and them not getting along or getting along, it could be all of those things. It could be all of those things if you only had adopted kids, you only had biological kids, if you adopted kids that were biological siblings. It could be any combination of those things. So again, just letting go of expectations and thinking that you can set things up. And I think I'm talking everyone out of this. I'm like, you have no control. It's going to be what it's going to be. But that's reality anyways. So I would just say, if you're worried about like, hey, you know, are they going to get along? Are they going to not? Yes, the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And then I think there's some thoughtfulness too. I think race and ethnicity and background and all of that plays into it too, is like, do you have people who are part of your community? If your child isn't going to look like anyone else in your family, are there racial mirrors for them in your community and in your family? And if not, that's something that you need to think through, because if you visually stand out from the rest of your family, you might also feel that. Whether you're fully accepted and welcomed, you might feel apart because of that. And kids could feel apart that look just like you, too. So,
yeah.
Again, it could go either way.
Yeah. Anything on the, like, adoption narratives of things, you know, like, oh, well, he's adopted, and that's why, you know, he's misbehaved or doesn't fit in or is the black sheep of the family, that you would address in regards to just, like, fear of this kid's, you know, because of trauma or because of feelings of abandonment, they're not going to be as successful in the future, and then, like, yeah, all the uncertainty that might come with that in regards to ever deciding to step forward.
Yeah, we have 9 kids, and they're all great candidates for the black sheep of the family. And so we're still waiting. There's still some competition ongoing. But I just think to tie a child's trajectory to that one piece of how they joined your family is just cutting them too short. It's a factor. It's something. It's a layer of things, just like if a child had a learning difference or...
Would you talk about kind of our grasp on high school graduation?
Oh, just like totally letting go of that. So we came from families where education was valued and modeled for us. My parents didn't go to college, and so it was a big deal for me and my siblings to go to college, and that was 100% in public school indoctrination of that you do this, 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 and college was always the next thing, high school graduation and working towards that. And with our oldest son, we started to realize pretty quickly he was not really... We were beating our heads against the wall. I made a chart, like a homework chart, that I sent with him to school, and all of his teachers had to sign, did he have homework or not? Not good parenting. It was like, hey, why don't we just burn down our whole family over homework? Anyways, all that to say, we were just on this kind of like one track of this is the natural next step. And when we started to encounter challenges with him, and it felt like we were just like, this isn't a barrier we're meant to push through. This is like, we're being like, we should be corralled somewhere else with this young man and be looking at other options. And so, it was kind of hard to let go of the idea of high school graduation and all that. He ended up going to an accelerated charter school where he graduated in about 5 months with his high school diploma and then went on to other things. But I'm glad he kind of broke through on that, because it's made us far more open-minded as we've had kids that are capable but don't want to go to college or have challenges, and maybe that's not a great option for them, but they want to go there. We're looking into the Aggie Achieve program, which is for adults, young adults with special needs to be able to attend college and have a college experience and continue learning. So I think it opened the doors for us, and now we really are looking at our kids as individuals and what is best for this kid, where are they headed, how has God designed and geared them, and how can we just nurture them towards their dreams, whatever those are.
Would you define success real quick? Like, what's success for your kids?
Knowing and loving Jesus.
Yeah, I think we want to guide our kids' hearts to the Lord, and so that would be the first and foremost. And yet the struggle is all the comparison. And so, and I think, we have two ends of the spectrum, right? We have our daughter who's in private school. And you know, so there's the affluent piece of that and the entitlement piece of that. And we have got Andrew who's in public school and in, you know, SPED or special ed. And so, so they're both on their own trajectories, and there's comparison on both sides of that. And so how do we keep the main thing in shepherding both of them of how you were created and how what the important aspects of life could be and should be following the Lord? And so that's the biggest challenge, I think, for me, because I'm a big comparer. And so, and all these expectations that I had, like loving, nurturing home, or, you know, follow Jesus and be successful, you know, so it just gets all muddled up, and the Lord continually brings me back to, am I trusting you today? And with who we have and what we have in front of us today. And so, and I think there is also, just to jump back to bio versus adoption, there is a tendency to go, okay, well, she'll probably be better off because she's biological. We've got more challenges because he's adopted. And it couldn't be further from the truth. You know, she's got her own issues because she's she's bio, and then, you know, he's got some advantages because he's in he's in a structured home now with us. And so I'm going to stop because I feel like I can go on and I'm rambling.
Okay. 3 minutes. How did you prepare financially to foster or no? But I've got 3 minutes left. So how did you prepare financially? I've got 3 minutes, right? Yeah, great.
Edna, does he really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I do. Anyway, somebody answer. How did you prepare financially?
When we entered into the adoption process, we were resourced. I mean, we were like fully resourced. And then, we could pay everything on an international adoption, we felt. And then all the Russia stuff fell through, and we were, and along with Sweet Putin, then.
Hashtag Sweet Putin.
There were like different financial hits that we took, and we were basically like zero. Like all that money that we had for earmarked for adoption was gone. And so then that's when Andrew came on the scene, and we're like, really, Lord? Really? Like, we were ready before, and now we've got zero, and now you bring him to us, and you fully. Yeah,
the body of Christ.
Come on.
The body of Christ.
Yep.
I mean,
you need a mic there, Mandy.
We left a
car at a body shop, or it wasn't a body shop, it was a mechanic that we couldn't pay for. And because we were like, well, it's either the money for adoption or the money to fix the car. We left the car there. Someone loaned us a car for whatever. Then we, used my mom's old car. And so if you just keep taking the steps, mm-hmm. God will provide.
Same. Just if it's what you're supposed to do, money's not an issue. I had a letter, my 19-year-old, it actually cost us $8,000, which we had zero. We were ministry budget. Five kids, whatever, and I have a letter. I just let her read. She's 19, but it said we were going to the day because all the money's due at the day you get them. There's not a payment plan, and I'm like, we're missing $1,127.30, and I don't know how we're gonna get it, but we'll be there. And then I just wrote a letter. It's like, if there's any way, whatever. But she's our daughter, so.
Yeah. So I think some common wisdom, just so that you're not like, okay, that all sounds great, but literally, where's that money coming from? Don't put adoption on a credit card. Be willing to avail yourself to the cloud of witnesses of the body of Christ that if they're not opening their homes, they have a biblical responsibility to share in the opportunity, and you may be cutting them short. Like, don't cut them short. They want to help. Even if it's $100, $1,000, we've had people literally like write the whole check and just go, I want to invest in this. And so we have an adoption fund that helps with that. And generally speaking, just being thoughtful, being a good steward of your funds, you might go into some debt, but recognizing like, okay, let's count the costs. Let's take that into consideration. Not being afraid of like, oh crud, how are we going to pay for college, right? Take a step back. You don't have to figure college out before you faithfully take the next step in opening your home to foster adopt.
Okay. Let me say, kids who come, my baby boys were free. Zero.
Yeah.
So, kids through the state.
That opened
they
your,
were state yeah. kids, yeah.
Did everybody get that?
College is free, too, for state kids.
Yeah, so there's an adoption subsidy for children that qualify, and about 80% of children that are adopted from foster care qualify. And they basically, if they can get into a state school, then college is taken care of. There's also a monthly subsidy until they turn 18, up to $400. Foster care, there's also a reimbursement of something like $600 a month in order to help offset. It's a reimbursement, but it offsets the costs of caring for those kids. So those are just some practical helps along the way. And I'll say, when it comes to international adoption and private infant adoption, there are hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting in adoption funds that aren't accessed because people don't ask. They don't apply. And so I would encourage you, don't let adopting a child from China or some other part of the world because you're like, oh gosh, that's a big number. There is some wisdom in regards to private infant adoption and understanding some of the dynamics there. I think that's a longer conversation. But if that's where you're like, we want to adopt an infant, Let's have that talk again. You can reach out, familyrestoration@watermark.org. Happy to share those resources that we have developed, or you can go to watermark.org/fosteradopt. Did you have something
just
to close?
Just another comment on, we did not prepare at all financially.
No, we did not.
And we paid the price for that, and there were some super, super lean years. I'm proud to say we started saving for our retirement 18 months ago, so we're never going to retire, but... our kids had free lunch at school. They wore only hand-me-down or garage sale clothes, and they're going to be okay. If that's the saddest part of their story, if that's their worst adverse childhood experience,
right?
They're going to make it through. And there's this meme that goes around, and when I read it the first time, I was like, yes, when you have more than you need, build a longer table, not a higher wall. Okay, it doesn't matter if you have more than you need it or not, build a longer table.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We took two more minutes of your time than you gave us, and you're welcome for that. So, Leo, will you pray us out?
Father, we are thankful for who you are and that you love us and that you love kids without parents one way or another, and that you have... utilized us broken people to take on that mantle and to bring kids into our homes and to bring them up as you would have us. And so, Lord, we do just pray for all those kids who are waiting. We pray for the hearts of the folks in this room. Lord, should you move them in that direction? Would you give them the strength and just the comfort of your spirit in guiding them? And Lord, we just pray that you would continue just to give us strength to take steps of faith with decision-making process, as well as those of us that have kids that we continue to love and shepherd. And so by your spirit, Lord, would you go before us and come behind us? And you love them more than we do, Lord, and you are going to take care of them in spite of us, but Lord, if it is your will to move us in that direction, would you? And so we just lift all that up in your mighty name. Amen.
Amen. Thanks, Leonard. Last thing is we've got an actual online course that's available on YouTube, and mentors of existing experienced foster and adoptive families that we ask to walk alongside you. So if you're beyond the, like, we're just considering and we're ready to take a step, that course is available to you. Again, just email familyrestoration@watermark.org, and we'll pair you up with a mentor couple, and then you can go through the course at your pace because it is on YouTube, and take some steps. We'll even meet with your family and friends to help them think through what their role and responsibilities and opportunities are to support and encourage you. And so that's available to you. If you're not a member of Watermark, it's accessible to you, but we might turn around and go, hey, who do you know or who's at your church that can walk alongside you through this process and go from there. So thanks for being here.